Hey, welcome to this podcast, second episode of the Story Weave podcast. Let's just listen to a moment. This is jamming music by Duncan Moore. It's my son. And this really goes along with the idea of family, because in our family, we swap music back and forth and share it. So this music will fade out in a minute, but I wanted to give you a chance to listen a little. So last time we talked about how physics is misguided, physics story is misguided with respect to a vitally important social target, which can be said in this way. It's like, you know, our kids have self-talk rooms where they talk to themselves about who they are, self, other, and belonging in this universe we're in. We adults probably have come to some realization about that. But with the situation of stories today, our main suppliers of story come from two sources. Suppliers of story about who we are, about this universe and who we are in it. It comes from physicality's story, which physics is the custodian of official story about physicality. And, you know, even though we all love physicality, we love exercise, we love sports, we love being out in nature, we love our bodies, that's physicality. And so you can see right there that physics story is much narrower than that. Physics is about manipulating material and controlling it. And it's done a fantastic job with that. The other supplier of story about us and who we are is spirituality, and church is really the official custodian. You know, we have a number of religions. The dominant one in my upbringing and in many households is Christianity. And so Christianity was for me as I was growing up, the custodian of that kind of story, of spiritual story. And of course, spirituality is much broader than religion, I know that. But the point I'm making here is that our two official custodians, physics telling us about physicality and church telling us about spirituality, leaves a lot to be desired. And so, you know, the question that you would be wondering right now, I think, is, well, you know, how are you going to do anything about that? How are you going to tell any story that bridges those two? Or, you know, what is the alternative? That's really the question. What's the alternative to stories, church stories of spirituality and physics stories of physicality? So what I'm going to tell you right now is that, you know, I have gone through nearly a whole lifetime. Well, not quite. I hope not. But anyway, I'm a senior, and so I have come to a reconciliation of those things that I think would be very important for people to understand, because I spent my whole career steeped in the issues of measurement, prediction, and control of physicality. So I went deep into mathematics, you know, or you might say high up the mathematical trees, and I succeeded in that. I was a professor at the University of Toronto. I earned tenure there. I did international publications. But even then, I found something was bothersome about it. And I left academics. I left that senior or that tenure position, and I went into industry. That was in 1980. And from 1980 until really 2004 or so, 2003, I worked in industry. And there I worked in the United States and in Europe, in Holland. And again, you know, it was successful. But always something was bothering me about that narrow mission. And I went really deep into mathematics. I love math and I love physicality. But I left all of that and went into social work in 2004, 2003. There's some really interesting stories that are interesting to me. I think you would enjoy them too about that. I'll tell them later. But the thing I want to tell you today is that, you know, in these podcasts, I would like to hold two things together that are difficult to hold. One is that, you know, mathematics, there's a difference between knowing mathematics and knowing about it, knowing where it fits, knowing where its place is in our culture and how it got there. So a person can be horrified by mathematics and yet still be aware of what it is, what it's really about in its essence, not the details. You know, I've said before that our kids are taught mathematics. I think it's in a not the best way these days at all, because you don't need to know really today. It's not so important to know equations or how to solve equations unless you're in that segment of career. Unless you're going into that segment of career, there's really no need to know how to solve equations. It is really important to know what role equations play and what's the roots of that. What are the roots of math? Well, how do they work in? How do they play into where we are today? So I'll hold that and try not to scare you off with mathematics. On the other hand, some people really, really love mathematics, and those people are probably perplexed by some of the limitations. The same is true of physics. Physics, you know, you may not be interested at all, but what's important is to know where it fits, where it has taken us. And in a sense, it's taken us into a really scary place, because physics tends to undermine spirituality. And I promise you, if you go far enough into physics, go really deeply into the story, not the experimental data, but the stories that are taught, then what you will find is they really undercut our understanding of who we are. It undercut the idea of self, other, and belonging as being anything but illusion. And that's terribly disruptive to the psyche. And, you know, those things leak into us. Even if you don't study physics, the stories of physics come out. We hear about space-time continuums, and we hear about black holes, and we hear about all of these things that, when it comes down to it, those are all dedicated to the idea of measurement and prediction. So I'm getting a little far off on there. What I'm trying to say is that, I want to hold the story of physics and mathematics for the purpose of understanding what it is, where it came from, where it got us to, where we are now, and then where we are likely to go. Okay, now, so how would I know where we're likely to go? Well, I don't know, of course, but I've dedicated my life to going deep into understanding physics and mathematics. And then I took an alternative route. And so I went through 20 years of unlearning, of going back and revisiting the things that were interesting to me or that absorbed me when I was young. And, when I was young, I really got captivated by the mystery of things. One of my favorite things, and I haven't talked about it lately, when I was about 15, you know, I was introduced through a family relative, an uncle, a new uncle. My aunt had got remarried. I was introduced to amateur radio when I was just a kid, really, just 15. And so I was just mystified, just amazed that you could put together, a kit that was a transmitter, and you could buy a receiver and put up an antenna. I put an antenna up on a 50-foot tower, made my own antenna, put it up there, and talked on code at first, with code, Morse code, all over the world with people. Now, there was no internet. It wasn't plugged in anything. It was all by itself. We used to set up antennas out in the middle of fields, run a generator and plug it in and see who could talk to the most people during the night. So to me, that was just amazing that, you know, I didn't understand electronics, still don't really, but, you know, here were these glowing tubes and an antenna and some electricity, and you could actually talk to people all over the world. It's like that was just mysterious and amazing. That's what really set me off, and I was good at math, and set me off to try it. I wanted to really understand that. How does all this stuff work? Well, you know, I went through my career and went deep into it, and it, you know, the bottom line is nobody understands how it works. What people understand is how to use it. So, you know, the electronics and electromagnetic behavior, of which that's what the internet uses, electromagnetic behavior. People have learned how to predict, measure, and predict what and control what happens with these devices, and they've learned how to harness electricity. But if you think people really understand what electromagnetic behavior is, then I'll tell you, you're wrong. But off in the future, we will have a better understanding. So I went through that magical period of youth where I was just fascinated, and that sent me into learning electrical engineering. Then I found out I was fascinated by the mathematics. That was at the time when I finished college, undergraduate school, right at the time when we were landing on the moon. And I went out to graduate school at the University of Southern California. And out there, I actually met Neil Armstrong. I have a book signed by him. It's the only autograph I've ever asked somebody to give. I took my linear algebra book, and he signed it. He gave a presentation because he had almost finished a master's degree out at USC. He didn't quite finish, and then he landed on the moon, and they said, look, if you come back and give a talk on the moon landing, that'll satisfy your requirement of a thesis for a master's degree. And so he got his master's degree, and he came back and he gave that talk. And so I went behind. They said, don't go behind and ask him for autographs, but I couldn't take it. I went back there. And so I asked him the, you know, question of a youthful person is like, tell me, were you scared? You know, that kind of thing. He said, you bet I was. But anyway, so I was, you know, I grew up in that time when the space exploration was just really at its peak of excitement. And so I was all into the mathematics of that kind of stuff. And I found out, I just love mathematics. And so, you know, that's what drew me in, was the magic of amateur radio. So I want to kind of end up this one by saying I went through a long period of unlearning and then relearning. Unlearning and relearning. So by doing that, it's very difficult to unlearn. You know, something that you spent years and years learning, it's just difficult to throw it away. And you don't quite throw it away, but you set it aside and say, no, let's look at this again. And so what I've discovered is there's really five things missing from the textbooks in physics and applied mathematics. But, you know, I know people are not, I don't want to teach that to everybody, but those five things are much more supportive of spirituality. And through those five things, you can see the common roots, common roots of both church and physics. And the common roots extend all the way back that, you know, 2,000 years or 2,500 years. Even, you know, to the time before Christ, when you have people like Pythagoras and Democritus, you know, the roots of physics go way back there. And, of course, the roots of church for Christianity go way back there, too. And so the five missing things I'll tell you just a little bit about that. I don't want to make this podcast too long. I'm just setting sort of a foundation. I want you to know that I'm holding kind of two really not separate, but as far as interests go by people, two diverse things. One is technical, you know, the mathematics and physics, but I just want you to know about it. I'm not going to teach it. And then through this relearning, through these five missing things, I could teach an alternative mathematics for the people who are really in it. I could teach you a different geometry from the one you learn. And this geometry, which is all rigorous, I mean, it's rigorous stuff, but not it doesn't build on top of what's there. It digs into the roots and finds another uncultivated taproot that hasn't been cultivated by physics. And so from there, you uncover that. You know how that'd be true of a plant. If you find a root that hasn't been cultivated and you go and give it some fresh nutrients and let it grow, then you're going to get some new growth. And so the alternative geometry is new growth from a missing taproot. So all of that sounds very technical, but what I want to emphasize is that the reason for bringing that up is to say that that taproot and the growth from it, those five things that are missing, those are really supportive of spiritual essence. Just like the church is supportive of spiritual essence, except that it's put layers and layers and layers of clothing on it that really tend to mainly confuse, in my opinion. And so, and I guess the final thing I want to say about that is just to speak to why is it that these five things haven't appeared in mathematics and physics? Why is it that this taproot has not been cultivated? And I guarantee it's not because people weren't smart enough to do it, because, I am not really, I'm not a brilliant guy. I'm just persistent. I'm competent and I'm persistent. It's not for lack of any creativity or intelligence by the people that came before us. It's more the reason is more aligned with the fact that the domain of physics and mathematics does not want to invite in spiritual conversation. So this root, this uncultivated root, you can do without it to pursue measurement, prediction, and control. Although they are having difficulties now, you will find if you just listen a little bit about quantum mechanics and relativity, you'll find that they don't go together very well. There's a problem that occurs when you try to put them together. Quantum physics is about the very, very small, and relativity is about the extremes, about gravity and about speed affecting things. So relativity is sort of the big picture, and quantum physics is the tiny. And those two just don't come together. And I think I'm pretty sure that it's because relativity is really missing. Relativity needs those uncultivated roots. Well, I'm getting out of bounds here. So I would love in the future, and it will happen, to find some people who are really in love with mathematics and teach them these five missing things, because it's extremely interesting. But for moms who are talking to their children about spirituality, and that children are going to school that is mainly focused on preparing them for physicality, for a world of measurement, prediction, control of production and consumption. So the children get so many mixed messages. So on top of this alternative foundation that I have, you can put a layer there that is for the moms. Here's the way you can talk about physicality and spirituality and the reality of daily life, where it makes sense and it doesn't require mathematics, it doesn't require equations or those things that you learn in school. It does require awareness of where things came from, what happened in history, what's happening now, and you know, what is likely to happen in the future. And that likely to happen in the future part gives you plenty of common sense things to use in talking to your children. So I'm going to wind it up there. Didn't quite know exactly where this was going. I just wanted to say this last one thing. In the first episode, what I did was I first did a recording like this, and then I transcribed it, and then I cleaned it up in text, Word document, and then I read it back for the podcast. But you know, that just takes away from so much from your from the feeling of it. To you know, I kind of feel bad about all the misspeaking I do and the uhs and the ahs and all of that, but that makes it real, I realize. And so you please put up with the awkward speech. I could clean it up and read it, but then I sound like a plastic person or something, which I'm not. You're not. Neither one of us are plastic people. So thank you for listening, and take care.